Brian's dead. I made it firmer.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you very much. And I thank all of our audience and our calling in, our listeners who called in. I also thank John Shuck, our wonderful engineer who facilitates all this. And stay tuned for Teresa Mitchell and Press Watch.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
This is KBOO Portland. It is 9 o'clock and Press Watch is next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Privacy versus the Rise of Surveillance Tech on Monday, November 18th from 6:30 to 8:30 at the Northwest Academy in Portland. Cyrus Farivar, author of the book Hobbyist Data, will speak on legal and privacy history and what our rights are currently, and how law enforcement agencies and companies can collect and use our private details, often without our knowledge. Again, that's Privacy versus the Rise of Surveillance Tech with Cyrus Farivar on Monday, November 18th from 6:30 to 8:30 at the Northwest Academy, 1130 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. It's Press Watch time. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. And before I get started, I want to tell you that the book and record sale is coming up. And I know that there's a ton of people listening to me right now who are thinking, what? It's still coming up? Yeah, it is. The book and record sale is coming up, and actually it's going to be on Solstice. It's going to be on the 21st. Let me read the copy here. KBOO is excited to announce that we are accepting donations for our annual and infamous book and record sale. And I suppose the infamous part is because it's always such a, well, it's always such a logistical challenge to get all those books and records together. But we do it in a demonstration of what communities can do. This is community radio. And so now's the time to get on Volgistics and or to contact the volunteer coordinator and arrange to help with the book and record sale. So that's going to be on Solstice. It's going to be from 12 noon to 10 p.m. And that's the 21st of December. And that's going to be just behind the building here at the Jupiter Hotel, at the Jupiter Next. And so they are being very generous to us. And if you donate to the book and record sale, you can be entered to win a night stay at the Jupiter Hotel. So they're even nicer than that. And I want to say that the book and record sale is a blast. And when it comes to holiday gifts, well, what a cool thing to find just the right thing for your friend or your family. And, you know, put a little post-it note on it saying you got it at the book and record sale so they can know that not only are they getting a gift from you, but they are part of KBOO getting a gift. So book and record sale coming up. Look for that, and please bring your books and records and CDs. And somebody told me that she was going to bring in old iconic posters from Cuba. So you can look for that, too. And yeah, you better watch for me, because I'm going to try to grab a couple of those for myself. Cool things coming up at the book sale. So I hope that you can participate with that. Also want to say before I get started that I want to ask you to bring up the podcast. Just bring up KBOO Press Watch podcast on an internet server. Find one. There's more than one available. You can get it on the KBOO app. You can get it iTunes, I believe. And another friend told me that they are involved in actually getting it posted on different servers. And so I hope that soon it will be very easy to get all KBOO programs on all major servers. So I'm asking you to look for the podcast, but also remember, rate and review the podcast, whatever you listen to from KBOO, rate and review it, because that's how it's done these days. That's how these things become visible to other people. Rate and review, find the podcast, and the podcast you will find will simply be this broadcast. So this is Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know, and of course, yesterday was impeachment, and I had my impeachment party ready. I got up early, turned on a corporate news program and watched, because I wanted to see how they handled it, and started tweeting fiercely, and I'm going to do the same thing tomorrow morning as we have more impeachment inquiry hearings going on in Congress. This is a historic event, and I will be live tweeting, and my Twitter feed is at, or my Twitter handle or whatever you call it, is at KBOO Press Watch. At KBOO Press Watch, easy to remember. At KBOO Press Watch. And so find that and follow me, please. And I will be tweeting my analysis and comments about what is going on, because I do think that it's a very important thing. It ain't everything and it ain't enough, but it's very important. It's historic. And I think that you will want to see what I have to say and to comment yourself on Twitter at KBOO Press Watch. That'll be tomorrow morning. And you can find my thread also from yesterday. So what does impeachment, Ukraine, and the coup in Bolivia hold in common? I'll explain shortly, but before I go any further, I want to state that the important thing about the impeachment inquiry is this question. May the U.S. president use the resources, arms, and funds of the USA to ensure his reelection? May the U.S. president use the power and prestige of the office, the arms, the funds, the resources of the USA to ensure his own reelection? Because if the answer is yes, or if the answer is, oh, it's no big deal, then there is absolutely no reason to bother holding an election. Democracy is over. This is a very dangerous work for what remains of democracy in this benighted nation and the world. Stephen Miller and Chad Wolf are in the Trump administration, and they are in positions of extreme and very covert power. And I will be explaining some of that in just a moment. And they are fascists. Things are happening quickly. Not all is visible. Chad Wolf, if you haven't heard the name, is very much, well, he is now the head of the Homeland Security, or Fatherland Security, as it's known. And he was very enthusiastic in coordinating the kidnapping and torture of children as the horror proceeds at our borders. Not all is visible. But fortunately, you do have community radio. And there are some journalists still out there. So I have another public service announcement. And this is directed to Trump supporters and in and out of the police and the military. Hands-off journalists. Hands-off dissenters. And particularly, hands-off Medea Benjamin. Hands-off Medea Benjamin, you mewling, cowardly fascist thugs. In that sentence, by the way, the worst insult was fascist. So I will invite your calls on the subjects of the hour. First, a little news from NeverAgainAction.com. And pardon me while I adjust my microphone. Never Again Action is the Jewish group that has been pushing back against the abduction of children. And they have published a statement, so I'll read from it. It says, "When we took action in Elizabeth, New Jersey in June, we hoped that we would inspire others to take action as well, but we had no idea that it would spark the largest ever mobilization of American Jews and allies against the persecution of immigrants. We were blown away, pardon me, when 30,000 people signed up with us, ready to do what it takes in this urgent moment." They write, "We hustled to support the 40-plus actions that happened across the country this summer, and we know that there are thousands more people who have been ready to throw down since then. because so many people showed up and pulled off so many actions, we had to make important choices in a hurry, and we made some mistakes. We are sorry. We know we haven't made it easy to get information and get connected. They write, that's about to change. We have spent the last 3 months developing a blueprint so tens of thousands of us can be in this fight for the long haul. Over the summer, we won some tangible victories, but ICE is still terrorizing immigrant communities and the camps remain open. And that's only going to be more true in 2020 as Trump and his administration attack immigrants to rile up their racist and xenophobic base for the election. We are not going to sit at home, they write, while people are dying in camps and families are being rounded up. We are not going to wait and see what happens. We are going to build a movement to actually stop ICE from functioning and actually close the camps, and we won't stop until we win. It all starts in December. In the first week of the month, we are going to take mass coordinated action in several key locations, followed by a wave of distributed actions across the country, bigger and bolder than in the summer. By the end of 2019, every American will know that there is a growing movement determined to do what needs to be done, just waiting for them to join. So there's more on that, and it's at neveragainaction.com. So that is the Jewish contingent of the many people who are fighting back against the ICE kidnapping and child abduction horror. By the way, you may have heard that the Border Patrol is able to enforce a 100-mile constitution-free zone, and that would include that was 100 miles from the border. So if you draw 100 miles from the border, they say that this is a constitution-free zone. That's a lie. There's no such damn thing as a constitution-free zone. Constitution applies to the United States. So if you are an officer with Border Patrol, or if you're with any agency and you are asked to violate constitutional guarantees, then your duty is to refuse duty. It's quite simple. And it may be appropriate to arrest your commander. Again, there's no such thing as a constitution-free zone. Every person has the right to immediately reject it. There is no force of law in the idea of a constitution-free zone. It is simply a fascist takeover, and any person is fully justified and legally justified in the end to resist it. And if you are an officer of the law and you are asked to enforce a constitution-free zone, then I think I can say with moral clarity and legal clarity that you must refuse duty, and it would be appropriate under certain circumstances to arrest your commander. This is, of course, best done in mass. Now turning to international news, Jeanine Añez Chávez, the blonde white supremacist who has now taken over the post-coup Bolivian government, is known for a tweet message she put out some time ago that says, quote, I dream of a Bolivia free of indigenous satanic rituals. The city is not for the Indians. Send them to the high plains. And in fact, the Christian fascists have taken power in La Paz, and they're holding Bible rituals and burning the flag of the indigenous Bolivians as Evo Morales, the elected leader, was forced to flee Mexican asylum. And you may have seen in the U.S. and corporate press that there were problems with the elections or with the power of Evo Morales, but he had at least 47% of the electorate, didn't he? And the person who has now taken over on behalf of the U.S. and the corporations and the lithium capitalists do not have any popular support at all. So this is completely anti-democratic, and you should always be suspicious when you see in the U.S. press that someone else is having, you know, some stain on their act of democracy, because the U.S. is just as guilty of that sort of thing. And certainly you may recall that neither the Bush administration in 2000 nor the Trump administration had a majority, but they took power. That's a big old problem. And if we applied the same sort of logic, if we apply the same sort of logic to the U.S. as is being applied so carefully to Bolivia, then we have a right for a revolution as well, don't we? Not only that, but Trump closed polls and engaged in other chicanery, which invalidates his election. And frankly, he was not elected. He simply took power to our shame and horror. And the impeachment proceedings are being accused of being anti-democratic, I find that laughable under the context. Context isn't going to go away. Now, in Bolivia, the fascists have taken power. The fascists have gotten support, historically, from the CIA. And so I want to reveal some of the details about what's happening in Bolivia. There's some details that you need to know. The party that is now taking power is called the, in English, the Bolivian Socialist Falange, which is very confusing, partly because the word socialist is in there, just as the National Socialist, this is a translated phrase, just as the National Socialist took power in Germany, they had nothing to do or very little to do with any socialist ideas and were actually just fascists. And the revelatory word that there is Falange, which is, as you may recall, a name for the Spanish fascists, and they are in fact fascists and not socialists. So the Falange has taken power. They're a Bolivian political party from Wikipedia, established in 1937. It was the country's second largest party between 54 and 74. And as you may recall, the CIA was very active in the region in the 50s and always has been, actually. And after that, its followers have tended to gravitate toward the government-endorsed military candidacy of General Juan Pereira to power in 78. And especially towards the ADN party of the former dictator Hugo Banzer. It was founded in Chile by a group of exiles, and the Falangists initially drew their inspiration from Spanish Falangism, and indeed, in those early years, Wikipedia writes, it came close to espousing a fascist agenda. I think, given the further information that we have, even within this article, that Wikipedia is being absurdly cautious with that. They are simply fascists. Now, skipping ahead in the article, ideologically, the party's stance evolved from an adherence to Spanish Falangism to a more moderate form of statism. And, of course, the article is now out of date because they have engaged in a fascist takeover. Now, turning to grayzone.com, Bolivian coup leader Luis Fernando Camacho is a far-right multimillionaire who arose from fascist movements in the Santa Cruz region of Bolivia, where the U.S. has encouraged separatism. And speaking for myself, when you hear encourage separatism, that sort of thing, what it means is the National Endowment of Democracy, which is actually the National Endowment for Death Squads, has gone in there and given money to fascist groups, as they have around the world. If there's one thing the United States cannot stand for and is afraid of, it is an outbreak of democracy. It confuses Americans. Americans would much rather be told what to do, and when democracy breaks out, it's always a problem for the United States. But returning to the article, he has courted support from Colombia, Brazil, and the Venezuelan opposition. This article is by Max Blumenthal, who I mentioned a week or so ago as having been attacked by the police in the United States for his dissent. They made other excuses, and the excuses don't matter. He was attacked for being a dissenting journalist, and he's a good one. Max Blumenthal and Ben Norton wrote the article on Gray Zone, grayzone.com, an interesting site for you to pull up. They write, when Luis Fernando Camacho stormed into Bolivia's abandoned presidential palace in the hours after President Evo Morales' sudden November 10th resignation, he revealed to the world a side of the country that stood at stark odds with the plurinational spirit its deposed socialist and indigenous leader had put forward. With a Bible in one hand, and that's a very significant part, and a national flag in the other, Camacho bowed his head in prayer above the presidential seal, fulfilling his vow to purge his country's native heritage from government and returned God, this is a quote, to the burned palace. Pachamama, he said, this is a quote, will never return to the palace, end quote. He was referring to the Andean Mother Earth spirit. Quoting Camacho, Bolivia belongs to Christ, end quote. And skipping ahead, Bolivia's extreme right-wing opposition had overthrown leftist President Evo Morales that day, following demands by the country's military leadership that he step down. Virtually unknown outside his country, who had never won a democratic election, Camacho stepped into the void. He is a powerful multimillionaire named in the Panama Papers and an ultra-conservative Christian fundamentalist groomed by a fascist paramilitary notorious for its racist violence. More on that in a minute. Returning to the text, with base in Bolivia's wealthy separatist region of Santa Cruz. Camacho hails from a family of corporate elites who have long profited from Bolivia's plentiful natural gas reserves, and his family lost part of its wealth when Morales nationalized the country's resources in order to fund his vast social programs, which cut poverty by 42% and extreme poverty by 60%. And speaking for myself, that's what really injures the United States corporations the most. Returning to the text, while Camacho and his far-right forces served as muscle behind the coup, their political allies waited to reap the benefits. Now, I'm skipping through this article. It's long, and it's very much worth reading. It's on The Gray Zone, which is Blumenthal's website. Skipping ahead, the presidential candidate Bolivia's opposition to field in the October election, Carlos Mesa, is a pro-business privatizer with extensive ties to Washington. U.S. government cables published by WikiLeaks reveal that he regularly corresponded by American officials in their efforts to destabilize Morales. And as I'm reading this, keep in mind that when it comes to Christian fascists, there is a very, very strong ally in the Trump administration, and that is the Vice President, Vice President Pence, who is such an absurd and violent ideologue that he will not eat dinner in a room if there is a woman there. And you may think that's a little odd or quirky. It's not. It's a gesture that has a certain meaning. If his wife is in the room, then it's okay. And what that means is it's part of his rapist ideology, the Christian fascist rapist ideology, which asserts that the male sex drive, the urge, and particularly the degenerate urge to rape, is an essential right of men. So he will not eat in a room with another woman because he wants to make the gesture that he is very carefully excluding women who he otherwise would have a right to aggress upon in whatever degree he feels is appropriate for him, and whatever aggression he feels free for, right up to and including rape. And they can't be in the room because that would mean that he has the right to go after them. That's what it means. That's how violent Mike Pence is. And that's what Christian fascism is about. And that's why they want to force birth on women who have been raped. They want that consequence to always take place so that women can be forever tied to reproduction, forever subject to men. Returning to the text, Evo Morales, a former farmer who rose to prominence in Bolivia in social movements before becoming a leader of the powerful grassroots political party Movement Towards Socialism, or MAS, was Bolivia's first indigenous leader. Wildly popular in the country's substantial native and peasant communities, he won numerous elections and democratic referenda over a 13-year period, often in landslides. And speaking for myself again, this is very much, this coup is very much a race war. This is white supremacy. On October 20th, Morales won re-election by more than 600,000 votes, giving him just above the 10% margin needed to defeat opposition presidential candidate Mesa in the first round. Experts who did a statistical analysis of Bolivia's publicly available voting data found no evidence of irregularities or fraud. But the opposition claimed otherwise and took the streets in weeks of protests and riots. The events that precipitated the resignation of Morales were indisputably violent. Right-wing opposition gangs attacked numerous elected politicians from the ruling leftist MAS party. They then ransacked the home of President Morales while burning down the houses of several other top officials. The family members of some politicians were kidnapped and held hostage until they resigned. A female socialist mayor was publicly tortured by a mob. Skipping ahead, Luis Fernando Camacho was groomed by the Union Juventil Cruzanista, the Union Juventil Cruzanista, or the Santa Cruz Youth Union, and that's the fascist group I was talking about earlier. Fascist paramilitary organization that has been linked to assassination plots against Morales. The group is notorious for assaulting leftists, indigenous peasants, and journalists, all while espousing a deeply racist, homophobic ideology. This sounds familiar to you in Portland, and I think that it's something to particularly pay attention to. And when I read that, I'm thinking of the fact that I saw a photograph of local fascist leader Joey Gibson, I think is his name, in Hong Kong. And he was going around spreading his ideology and having a grand time because someone had paid for him to have that very expensive international flight. There is more than meets the eye The fascist infestation in the United States is reaching a critical phase. And they have had quite a victory in Bolivia, sadly for the world. Now, since Morales has entered office in 2006, reading from the Gray Zone article, the UJC, the Unión Juvenil Cruceñista of the Fascists, has campaigned to separate from the country, from a country its members believed had been overtaken by a satanic indigenous mass. This is the way Christian fascists talk about everything that is not their own form of Christianity. Returning to what is written there, the UJC is a Bolivian equivalent of Spain's Falange, India's Hindu supremacist RSS, and Ukraine's neo-Nazi Azov Battalion. Its symbol is a green cross that bears strong similarities to the logos of fascist movements across the West, and its members are known to launch into Nazi-style Sieg Heil salutes. Much more of that article, please find it. Now, you'll notice I mentioned Ukraine and the neo-Nazi Azov Battalion. That's a favorite of the United States. And when I say the United States, in its current form, well, they've been supported for a while now, including under Secretary of State Clinton's regime, but the U.S. has been supporting the Azov Battalion, so let me tell you about them. And this is, I've told you that I would tell you how all of these things relate to impeachment. Fascism across the world is being supported under the Trump administration by Stephen Miller and by Trump and by the hidden forces of the United States, hidden from you, a bit more obvious to people around the world. But let me just read from an ordinary Wikipedia entry on the Azov Battalion. The Special Operations Detachment Azov, also often known as the Azov Battalion, Azov Resident, or Azov Detachment, that's A-Z-O-V, is a Ukrainian National Guard regiment based in Mariupol in the Azov Sea coastal region. It first saw its combat experience recapturing Mariupol from pro-Russian separatist forces in June 2014, initially formed as a volunteer militia on the 5th of May 2014 during the Ukrainian crisis then. Azov was incorporated into the National Guard of Ukraine. All regiment members were contract soldiers serving in the National Guard of Ukraine. Now I need to stop there and say that this article has hinted at some things that you need to know when it comes to the impeachment inquiry. And that has to do with a word that I only heard from the Charge d'Affaires, Bill Taylor. He mentioned it at least three times, I think, and I was rather surprised to hear it, and that word is Donbass. Donbass. Utterly mysterious to Americans. What is Donbass? Donbass is the word for the Donetsk River region and now the Luhansk region, which chose to separate from the Ukraine in 2014. And when I say chose to separate, I mean that they collectively decided to become independent. And they did this for a number of reasons, political reasons having to do with economics in that area, which is the south and eastern part, a very substantial part of Ukraine. The U.S. was horrified. The Russians were quite pleased. Because this came on the tail end of what happened in Crimea. And I want to reframe what happened in Crimea, because when Bill Taylor, who is getting up telling his story and helping to impeach the president, you know, the good guy on our side, was telling outrageous and imperialist lies about what has been going on in the Ukraine. You need to know this. And knowing this does not slacken my desire to see impeachment go forward in the least. But the fact is, Crimea had a plebiscite imposed on it first. The Russians were behind this. Crimea is a little peninsula in the Black Sea, and it's barely a peninsula. It's almost an island, and it contains, it's quite a bit of land area, but it contains the Black Sea Fleet, the bases. They used to be Ukrainian and Russian, and previously were Soviet, and previous to that were Russian Imperial naval forces. The equivalent of Pearl Harbor to the United States, very much the equivalent of Pearl Harbor. And the Russians, when Ukraine started sliding very strongly towards NATO for various reasons, some of which were perfectly legitimate and democratic, and others had to do with the infamous corruption in Ukraine. The Russians went into Crimea and imposed a plebiscite. And the plebiscite, well, maybe you don't know that word. It's an effort. It's a vote. Put it to the vote whether people wanted to join Russia or not. And of course, all the pro-Russian people came out. Now, this is often criticized because the vote totals were ridiculous. Because naturally, it was self-selecting. The persons who were pro-Russian came out. But the fact is, the majority of the people in Crimea are pro-Russian, period. It's just a fact. There's no way around it. There are mitigating factors. There are groups, notably the Tatars, who have been ill-treated by the Russians and have reason to never accept this. But the majority of the people in Crimean Peninsula really did want to join Russia, and they did. And in 2014, the Russian-speaking people in eastern Ukraine, who had been very much a part of the Soviet Union and who thought of themselves as part of Russia, seceded through some electoral machinations, and mostly violence. They simply took their territory back. The Obama administration and Clinton's State Department was horrified and began immediately to arm the Azov Battalion. And I didn't get to the details on the Azov Battalion that you would find most interesting, and that is that they're a bunch of Nazis. This is a bit of a problem for Russia, as you may recall, which lost 90% of its generation in World War II, generation of males, people born around 1920, were all killed fighting the Nazis, and it was they who defeated, in fact, the Nazis by force of arms. The U.S. helped, but by and large, it was vast bloody battles by the Russians that defeated the Nazis, and they're not happy to be confronted by Nazis. The Azov Battalion was the first group to go and shoot back at the pro-Russian Donetsk and Luhansk and now Donbass separatists. So if you pull up Azov Battalion on Wikipedia, you can find the details about that. I'll skip ahead and find the details. On 27th of April 2016, we're skipping ahead a couple of years, 300 troops and light armored vehicles from the Azov Regiment were assigned to Odessa to safeguard public order, they write, after Mikhail Saakashvili wrote in social media about a rash of pro-Russian attacks on civilians. Azov published a media release on its website in November 2017, noting that it had met with a foreign delegation of officers from the United States Armed Forces and Canadian Armed Forces. This is significant because the Azov Battalion has been getting arms and has been supported by the United States for years now, despite or perhaps because of the fact that they are ideologically Nazis. When I say arms, I mean they've been given anti-tank guns. I think I have some details on that. Let me see if I can find that. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. It's 9:33 in the morning Pacific time. Let me skip ahead to details about who they actually are. The group's insignia features the Wolfsongel and the Black Sun, two Nazi-era symbols adopted by neo-Nazi groups. By the way, I noticed that there's a Black Sun poster on Foster Road that's been put up. It's rather large. And I think on my way home, I'm going to deface that poster. I would say that it is your duty to counter Nazis wherever they pop up, in every way, because the consequences are unacceptable. But returning to Wikipedia, members of the unit have stated that the inverted Wolfsongel has a different history in Ukraine and represents the Ukrainian words for United Nation or national idea. This is the usual fascist dodge. In addition to the Wolfsongel, Wikipedia writes, Azov soldiers have been observed using other aforementioned Nazi-associated symbols on their uniforms. And the Azov Battalion has dismissed accusations that their unit promotes fascist symbolism, and skipping ahead, of course, while being absolutely and determinedly fascist. The Simon Wiesenthal Center has protested training of Azov members by American forces, so that should give you a hint that there might be a bit of a problem with them. Skipping ahead, while Azov Battalion troops have denied that the organization has any neo-Nazi or white supremacist beliefs, a journalist stated that, quote, numerous swastika tattoos of different members and their tendency to go into battle with swastikas or SS insignias drawn on their helmets make it very difficult for other members of the group to plausibly deny neo-Nazi affiliations, end quote. So you can find that in Wikipedia. Now, they are a very powerful part of the government in Ukraine, and you'll notice that Zelensky hasn't said anything about them. Zelensky was elected around them and despite them, and now Zelensky is in a corner because he, president of Ukraine, must now pretend to represent the people who elected him while actually dealing with the military and political and economic force of the U.S.-supported Azov Battalion in his midst. What they say goes, period. And so that is the frame that all of this business with the impeachment is happening. That's what American arms are going to. And so when you hear from the Democratic Party, and again, I want to say that the Democratic Party, to me, disgusting pro-corporatists, the death of every left movement in the U.S., a party that I very much want to destroy, is worse, different, far more horrible than the Republican fascist party that we have in power now. And when I say I want to destroy the Democratic Party, I'm very sincere, but I want them to be destroyed after the Republican Party is destroyed, because the Republican Party is so determinedly fascist now, and that applies to every one of you who voted for Trump. I really mean that, and you know it's true. You've gone to the dark side, people. So let me tell you a little bit more about the Azov Battalion. This again is from Gray Zone. Known as a bastion of neo-Nazism, Ukraine's Azov Battalion has received teams of American military advisors and high-powered U.S.-made weapons. Last November, they're talking about 2017. An American military inspection team visited the Azov Battalion on the front lines of the Ukrainian Civil War to discuss logistics and deepening cooperation. Images of the encounter showed American Army officers poring over maps with their Ukrainian counterparts, palling around and ignoring the Nazi-inspired Wolfsongel patches emblazoned on their sleeves. Azov is a militia that has been incorporated in the Ukrainian National Guard and is considered one of the most effective units in the field, and speaking for myself, I bet they are with all those American arms, against pro-Russian separatists, returning to the text. But again, it also widely is known as a bastion of neo-Nazism within the ranks of the Ukrainian military that has been criticized by international human rights groups tied to an international fascist network and even a major terror plot. Here again, while I'm talking about all this, please bear in mind the fascist infiltration of U.S. police and military, generally speaking, and certainly here in Portland. Returning to that text, according to Lower Class Magazine, a leftist German publication, Azov maintains a semi-underground outfit called the Misanthropic Division that recruits heavily among the ranks of neo-Nazi youth in France, Germany, and Scandinavia. Foreign fighters are promised training with heavy weapons, including tanks. We're giving tanks to Nazis. What could go wrong? At Ukrainian camps filled with fascist fellow travelers, they even include military veterans like Mikhail Skillet, a Swedish former army sniper turned neo-Nazi volunteer for Azov. Quoting Skillet, "After World War II, the victors wrote their history. They decided that it's always a bad thing to say that I am white and I am proud," end quote. Foreign Azov volunteers, he writes, are driven by the call of the Reconquista, or the mission to place Eastern European nations under the control of a white supremacist dictatorship modeled after the Nazi Reichskommissariat dictatorship that ruled Ukraine during World War II. The mission is promoted effusively by Azov's chief ideologue, Andriy Beletsky, a veteran fascist organizer who leads the Social National Assembly. Here's another case of the use of the word social or socialist in Ukraine's parliament. Beletsky's assembly has pledged to outlaw interracial contacts and vowed to, quote, prepare Ukraine for further expansion and to struggle for the liberation of the entire white race from the domination of the internationalist speculative capital, end quote. These are the people, speaking for myself, that the United States is giving such extensive arms and logistical support to. I invite your calls. The number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. So now perhaps you begin to see why I am so interested in impeaching Donald Trump. And maybe the other reason is the fact that I'm transgender. I am transgender and transsexual. I am a woman. And women like me are being attacked by the cowardly fascists across the nation. The stats are out now. And there's no doubt about it. It's not just a feeling. The cowards are out, and they are attacking in their usual cowardly way, in which they can't afford to risk attacking someone like me one-on-one, so they attack in groups. Because, well, the problem with fascism and with American Trumpism is that it comes out of cowardice, it comes out of fear. And I want to explain that specifically. I'm not just insulting them, although I don't mind insulting them. The fear is the fear of complexity. It's the fear of making your own decisions, and it's so much easier when you have work to do to understand the situation in the world and in the nation. When you feel perhaps guilt about your part in whiteness, when you know that you are profiting from a system that is unfair and you just don't want to go there, the easiest thing is to go along with, not to actively join, by the way, the easiest thing is to go along with a white supremacist fascist movement. The fascism comes out of the fasces. When you see the sticks, when you see the bas-relief on the courthouse wall of sticks and an axe stuck in the middle of them, those are fasces. The fasces were carried by the lictor. The lictor went around Rome and Roman provinces with his men, his officers, and the sticks were kept in a bundle. The sticks were clubs. When it was necessary, when everything was right and the system was working as it should, the bundle stayed tied. That's where there's ties on the bundle. And the axe or the spear stayed in the middle. This represented the power of the state, the sticks to beat and to enforce and to inflict pain, the axe or the spear to kill. This was not to be opened. If you were a fascist, if you believed in power for power's sake, then you kept that bundle untied, and that is why you see the bundle, what the bundle with the sticks means. It's not a mistake. It means that this power is bound by law, is bound by judicious procedure. The extent to which that is true can be contested, but that's the idea. And the fascists, of course, have taken on different meanings since the rise of Mussolini. Not much different, though. This is the origin of it, those sticks, that beating. And really, that's what fascists love to do the most, is one-on-one when they can. You know, when I said several on one, but I mean personal beating. They like to see people experience pain and terror, because it makes them feel strong, because in their minds they're not strong, because fascism and Trumpism comes out of weakness. Once again, the number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. I'm warning you that this is a very dangerous week, and I'm asking you to pay attention to the impeachment hearings. I'm going to get into details of that, but I'll go to the first caller now. Bill's on the air. Hi, Bill. You there?
Hi. I'm great. How are you today? I would just like to let the folks know, you know, who are on air, that that we have engaged in this type of foreign training for troops. I don't know if a lot of folks in the area know about, but we used to run a school in Fort Benning called the School of Americas. And we used to train, you know, the Army officers from Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, and probably... pardon me?
Pinochet, but go ahead.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and so this isn't anything new, you know, with the United States, you know, and its armies. I mean, we train folks all over the world. You know, my son, he's in the first special forces group up in Fort Lewis, and he is currently over in, I'm sure, probably Africa right now. And, you know, so we send folks and we train folks all over the world, and we have, after World War II, quite extensively.
Yes, that's very true. And I want to say, as I'm bringing up all of these frightening things, I don't want them to be overly frightening. The weapons that I'm talking about, under circumstances of fascist takeover, can and will be taken by from those who wield them. And special forces, little known fact, are notorious for turning left after their service.
Absolutely. I am a former Army Ranger, and I am a proud Mr. Bernie Sanders type of person. So, and a lot of that left leaning usually comes from seeing, you know, our foreign policy applied and being a failure time and time and time again.
Seeing the nitty gritty.
You are. Oh yes, and after you are, and after you have been deployed, you know, to so many foreign, you know, countries, and you see, you know, that the tip of the spear type of mentality fails almost every time. You know, you just have to say, you know, I'm done, and you just have to go on in life.
Right on. Thanks for bringing that information to the public.
Yeah, you bet. You have a good day. Thank you very much.
You too. And we'll go to the next caller. I believe Pear's on the line. Hi, Pear.
Hey, good morning, Teresa. How you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
Hey, got some more information for you.
All right.
You know, the about the Azov Battalion. Apparently, I saw some story. I wish I could bring it up on my computer, but some guys from the Rise Above movement, which is a kind of a fascist movement. They were at, I think they were at the Charlottesville battle going on there. And they went to Europe, and they contacted people from the Azov Battalion, and they came back here, and they're in jail now, but they were arrested for fomenting some kind of disturbance here in this country.
That's exactly the sort of blowback that I intended to warn about, and that's why I want to draw attention to Bill Taylor's mention of the word Donbass. And again, I know it's just so alien. That's how bad our press is now. People don't know what the Donbass region is. It's Donbass. Please look it up.
I thought it stood for the Don Basin, the Don River Basin.
The Donetsk, the Donetsk and the Luhansk regions are now called the Donbass.
Well, you know, you go back through history, and you know, Ukraine never really. Well, Ukraine itself means borderland, and through history, it's been part of different empires. Been part of Russia, been part of the Polish-Lithuanian Empire. You know, right now the borders. You know, part of it is. Includes a lot of Russian-speaking people never wanted to be part of Ukraine in the first place. And it's, you know, you look at the maps, like, you know, Yanukovych, the guy who was a democratically elected president who was overthrown in 2014. Anyway, his party was strongest in the eastern part of Ukraine, and he was overthrown. And then there were talks about the new government would make a Russia no longer an official language. And so, you know, this is sort of the background of the uprising or the secession movement in eastern Ukraine.
Yeah, and I want to emphasize that, you know, if Bill Taylor had been honest about this, then what he would say is that Trump is fouling the game, and the game is that the U.S. corporations want continued cheap and easy access to oil, labor, agricultural products, chromium, titanium, copper, lead, and gold in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the U.S. have been playing the Democrat under the Obama administration was when the president was kicked out in Ukraine. You had Victoria Nuland in Kiev passing out cookies to these rioters, and you know, she was acting as Hillary Clinton's sort of top assistant, top aide.
And always the pretense that rather than these, I mean, rather than, it's not all that complicated, rather than these regions desiring independence and achieving independence, that it was simply Russian aggression. And this is the frame that Bill Taylor tried to set, that the Democratic Party, and the funny thing to me, is that the Republicans can't afford to contest that false narrative. I'll bet they'd love to. I bet they'd love to call out Bill Taylor on his hypocrisy, but they can't afford to because they're in the same game.
Well, yeah, I know that's one thing. I sort of the little takeaway I got from listening to the hearings yesterday was that it has a very narrow focus on whether Trump used this military aid as a kind of a, you know, leverage against the president of Ukraine.
Well, I think it's a significant question. I mean, if it's no big deal, if presidents can use the power of the office to win the next election, then why bother having an election at all? Democracy's over.
Well, I'd say, you know, okay, he's guilty of that. You know, that is an offense. But it's a narrow focus. Nobody says, why don't people ask, why is there military aid in the first place? Now, the Republicans did bring that up, that under Obama, he refused to provide military aid to Ukraine, which is an interesting question there. But, the impression I got from the hearings is that, you know, you have this narrow focus, and both sides sort of claim to be, against the Russians or super patriotic or whatever, and they're ignoring the questions of, why the military aid in the first place. And so, anyway...
Yeah. Thanks for that additional information.
Yeah. Well, check out that thing about the Rise Above movement. I saw a little bit about it, but this looks like a very interesting story to check.
Yes,
up
they
on.
They in right sector are also very fascist. Thanks for calling in. Number to call 503-231-8187. And I'm sure you'd agree, Per, that the Obama administration refused aid overtly, but that covert pipeline hasn't stopped, and the training and the arming was going on because U.S. government is a complex, huge, rich, old organization, and there's plenty of fascists in it. And right now, the fascists are very much in ascendancy. And go to the next caller. And thanks to the engineer, by the way, who does such a great job. That he compensates for my ADD by telling me the names over and over, and I dropped it again. I'm sorry, what was... Harry is next on the air.
Oh, greetings, everyone. Thank you for taking my call. You mentioned about the President Donovich, who actually was overthrown. But you have to understand, he was a Ukrainian. He was born in Ukraine, but he was a Russian. He was just an ethnic Russian.
I actually didn't mention that, but and what did you say, Donovich? Who's that?
Well, I think it was that the president who was overthrown in Ukraine.
Overthrown
in 2014.
I can pull up Ukraine on Wikipedia. I can.
Okay.
Yovanovitch.
Yovanovitch. Okay. He was actually he was born in Ukraine, but he's an ethnic Russian. Okay, a president being overthrown. Remember, he ran to Russia. During this time was also the purge of ethnic Russians from the government and the military. And so the people who are fighting Ukraine right now are actually Ukrainian rebels. The Ukrainian rebels are actually ethnic Russians. And in 2000, I think it was six. When was it? 2014.
Donbass war started up. Actually, I was just saying this, but go ahead.
Yeah, but remember when the airliner was shot down over Ukraine?
Yes.
And we blamed Russia.
Right.
It wasn't Russia. It was the Ukrainian rebels.
It would appear that, yeah.
What did Obama do? He blamed and went to the UN and says, oh, the Russia did this, we're going to put sanctions on them, and blah, blah, blah. But it was like, to the UN, but they didn't go anywhere because Russia has a veto. But the idea is we blamed Russia, not Ukrainian rebels, who are ethnic Russians, you know. So that's the type of things that are going on, and... And anyway, yeah, that's all I have to say.
Okay. Yeah, good points. And yeah, whoever, that was pretty clearly a ground-to-air missile, and doesn't fit the narrative. So that's always been pretty suspicious as to who shot down that aircraft. And the narrative always takes place. And in the impeachment hearings, I'm going to get back to that. We have these two very sober career diplomats, and by the way, I think that their game was very good. The Democrats' game was very good. They brought up Bill Taylor, who seemed tailored for gravitas, if I may, you know, make a joke, with his silver hair and his granite expressions. And he was he had his counterpart, who was sort of good cop, bad cop. Who looked affable with his bow tie and matching handkerchief. someone commented, one of the television comics, I can't remember which one, commented that he looked like he'd come from a 1950s movie. But the whole question, and the Democrats were able to get some traction with this, the idea that Trump had done this terrible thing. And part of the terrible thing is that he had failed to give arms to people defending us from democracy. And I've spent the entire hour pointing out how ridiculous that lie is in the context of American support for fascism and American imperialism in Ukraine and the real reasons for Ukrainian aggression. And as I've been saying, it doesn't make a bit of difference for the crux of the matter, which is, are we to allow the American president simply to throw the election using the power of the office? And I would say, of course not. And there are people who say that it's no big deal. And I'm kind of interested on and in how that is elaborated. I mean, how could it not be a big deal? either the president is bound by law or he is not bound by law. Either we have an actual contest or as close as we can get to it in presidential elections or elections at all for that matter, or once you get in, you can just throw your weight around. You can call up President of Ukraine and tell him that he can't have his arms money until he denounces your opponent in the election. How corrupt is that? So just how much of a stain are we willing to go around wearing, I'd like to know. And how much of a joke are we willing to make of what's left of American democracy? Number to call, 503-231-8187. And I have okay, apparently we don't have time to take calls at the moment, so I'm going to wrap this up. I want to tell you again that I've been tweeting at KBOO Press Watch. I was live tweeting as I watched the first couple of hours of the hour and a half anyway of the impeachment hearings, and I'm going to do it again tomorrow morning as the impeachment inquiry hearings begin again, because I find it very useful in countering the Trump administration and its wild and unbounded fascism. And it is connected to the projection of American fascism around the world and into our military and our police departments. It is a very dangerous time with the, because as I was saying, the nature of fascism and of Trumpism is that fear, and Trump is going to, of course, drum up his base, and they will take his dog whistles, and who knows where they will go with it. But they will certainly go to a more violent place with it, and it is that violence that I personally must confront. I want to say these days white men feel rather cornered, and I am not against white men. I am against white men-ism, if you will. And of course, that's the whole problem, is that the society has been dominated by white males for so long, and now we must define and confront and remove that illegitimate power. But that doesn't mean that you, if you are a white male, cannot be on the side of right. And indeed, most of the white males that I know are quite honorable. And I'm just, you know, saying this really obvious thing, because even though I'm a trans woman, even though I've been railing against whiteness, I'm asking you to be strong and to do this difficult thing. It is difficult for white males. You know, we can say, oh, well, too bad. You already got the cash. You're cool. But I understand that this is a difficult time for the nation in general. But the white males who support Trump are being rallied to double down on their obliviousness and their fear and to support something that they know is morally wrong. And this is what I want to underline. Because this fascism is morally wrong, it will not prevail. It may take a while to organize against it. It may take a while to wake up the counter, but eventually those who side with fascism will pay the price. So don't go there. Don't support Trump. And listen to KBOO Portland. Please support KBOO at kboo.fm and listen to us on 90.7 FM and other frequencies in Cascadia and via kboo.fm to all the ships at sea.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 10 o'clock. Coming up next on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein reviews day one of the impeachment inquiry. Then at 11, it's on Between the Covers. And at 11:30, Words and Pictures, SW Concert speaks with award-winning cartoonist Kevin Huizenga.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Privacy versus the Rise of Surveillance Tech. On Monday, November 18th, from 6:30 to 8:30 at the Northwest Academy in Portland. Cyrus Farivar, author of the book Hobbyist Data, will speak on legal and privacy history and what our rights are currently, and how law enforcement agencies and companies can collect and use our private details, often without our knowledge. Again, that's Privacy versus the Rise of Surveillance Tech with Cyrus Farivar on Monday, November 18th, from 6:30 to 8:30 at the Northwest Academy, 1130 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.